Hi, everybody. Chodesh Tov. Good morning. So I'm just going to dive in because I don't have a lot of time and I feel like I have a lot of things to share. So I'm going to start based on a sefer called Otcha Bekesh from based on the teachings of Rav Kugler. I want to put into context the time frame that we're talking about, not really historically, but more spiritually. So we're going to start back from Moshe Rabbeinu. We all know he got the Torah and he gave it over to Yehoshua. Yehoshua gave it over to the Zekenim. The Zekenim gave it over to the Nevi'im and the Nevi'im to Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. So that was the Mesorah, that was the transmission. Now we have to understand that the Torah is not just words, okay? Between the lines of the Torah is something that we would call an Or Eloki. There's like a godly light infused in the Torah. And so I would personally like to call that like the neshama of the Torah, right? We have the words of the Torah, which would be like the body, the goof, and then we have the neshama of the Torah, which is the godly light that's infused within the words of the Torah. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah, and he gave over this transmission to Yehoshua, etc., he was also giving over this ability for the people who are learning this to be infused with that Or Eloki when they're connected to Torah. And this Or Eloki really was a manifestation of a very deep relationship that existed between us and God, kind of like a husband and wife. So when you have a husband and wife, hopefully, right, they have a very deep, sort of inexplicable type of relationship. And so all of the physical things that are done in the home between the husband and the wife, whether it's cooking, laundry, you know, running errands, whatever it is, there's a deeper meaning that exists between them. It's different if a cleaning lady, you know, a maid or how, you know, somebody you're paying cooks dinner than if the wife cooks dinner. I think we can all appreciate that there's something special that's manifested in those even physical things that a husband and wife do for each other. And the truth is that it's a very sad situation if that is lost, right? And the things that we do just become mere obligations as opposed to opportunities to, you know, manifest that connection. And so we have to realize that we got married to Hashem on Har Sinai. We are also married to Hashem. Our physical marriages are really just ways for us to better understand what it means to be married to God. So we got married to God on Har Sinai. And so we also have a very deep, inexplicable relationship with Him. And so that can also be manifested, that deep relationship can also be manifested in what we quote-unquote do for God, right? The Torah, the mitzvot, the actions that we do in our relationship with Hashem should also be infused with a deeper meaning. There's an inherent light in the day-to-day things that we do for God, and that is something that we want to try to... That is something that we want to try to connect to. Sorry. I thought I was in front of it. You know, it's kind of like if you have... it's going on and off, right? All right, I'm here. If you have an author who writes a book, you know, so very often, lahavdil, right, we can sort of, you know, connect to the soul of the author through what he's writing. So we have an opportunity to connect to God, right, through this book, quote unquote, that he authored for us. Okay, and so it's imperative that when we learn Torah, we're not just, I don't know what to do, it keeps going on and off. It's imperative that we read between the lines, okay? It's not something that we should, you know, just look at the words, but it's something that we should do in terms of, you know, understanding, reading between the lines. You know, again, Matan Torah was an ability for us to connect to this godliness inherent in those words. I really don't know what the trick is here. It literally keeps going on and off. I'm not moving, I'm not touching it. Okay, and so, by the way, that's why when we make brachot, which I thought this was a very interesting way of looking at it, when we say, when we make a bracha before we do a mitzvah, we say, asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav, right? So the word kiddishanu kind of, brings up in our minds this concept of kiddushin, right? We know that when we get married, right, we are being kudeshet to our husbands, right? There's a concept of kiddushin. So when we are making a bracha before doing a mitzvah, we are basically, you know, connecting to that idea of we are being the kudeshet to Hashem, right? We are married to God. And so again, it helps to make the mitzvot and the Torah that we're learning much more special. So again, Moshe transmitted this ability to infuse in us this Or Eloki to Yehoshua, to the Zekenim, to the Nevi'im, etc. So we have to understand that we used to have, Bayit Rishon, through the first temple, we had hundreds of thousands of Nevi'im, right? We had tons and tons and tons of Nevi'im. It was very, very commonplace. And so, you know, the Jewish people served Hashem very differently than we serve Hashem now. In those days, it was very, very different. They had a very natural connection to God that we have unfortunately lost. And so they didn't even need tefillot, right? They didn't have a sitter. They naturally woke up in the morning and felt a very strong gratitude to God for everything that they were doing step by step. They didn't need anybody to put words in their mouth. They had on their own this very, very natural connection. You know, we have to realize that in those days, if a person wasn't feeling well, they, instead of calling the doctor, they would call the Navi. They would go over to the Navi and they'd say, you know, this is hurting me, that's hurting me. And there's an idea that every sin that we do, right, every mitzvah, I should say, that we do is connected to a part of our body. So they could speak to the Navi and he would tell them what you need to fix. They would do tshuva, the Navi would daven for them, and then they would feel better. So, you know, that again, it's important to understand where we were coming from and what we had. And this wasn't that far before this whole story that we're talking about here. So with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, there was no more prophecy. There were no more Nevi'im. There was a darkness, okay? The Shechina, right? Hashem's presence went into exile. It was hidden. It was covered. And so externally, the Jews were going through the motions. They were learning. They were davening, but they were doing mitzvot, but they weren't davening. Well, they were davening in their own words, right? They were doing their avodat Hashem, but there was a depth of light that was missing at the time, unfortunately. That natural connection that they had before was just not there to the same degree. And so after the Nevi'im, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, came onto the scene, they took over guiding the people. And it says that, you know, the Medrash says that when the people who had witnessed, who had been alive at the time of the first temple, saw the second temple, they actually cried, okay? Because they saw that there was something that was so obviously not there. And so, you know, by the second temple, there was no Aron anymore, right? The Aron HaKodesh was not there. The Aron had the Luchot, right? The tablets that Hashem gave to the Jewish people, the Torah that Hashem gave to them. You know, all they had to do was see it, and their hearts were just infused with, you know, with an incredible light. Okay, the Urim V'Tumim, right, that the Kohen Gadol would go and he would ask God what to do, right? And messages would light up on the Urim V'Tumim directly from Hashem. That was no longer there. There were miracles, 10 miracles that were in the Beit HaMikdash, in the first Beit HaMikdash, on a consistent level. They weren't there in the second Beit HaMikdash, at least not consistently. It was very, very on and off. So again, the menorah was lit, but the light that it exuded was much weaker. So it was at this time that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola actually canonized the tefillot. They wrote the siddur that we use today. And so we do want to have some level of emunah, right? We believe that the words that they wrote down, they weren't making it up from their own heads, right? They were being guided by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were being guided by God. And so those words do have the power to illuminate our souls, obviously. And there's a light that we can tap into for sure. But again, for Jews that were used to going to the Navi and davening in their own words and having such a natural connection, it was a very difficult transition for them. So post Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the guiding of the Jewish people fell on the Zugot and on the Nasi and on the Av Beit Din. And again, for those who were used to the Nevi'im, this was very, very hard. And this was, I thought, was very interesting. I never really thought about it this way because I think this is something that a lot of people struggle with nowadays, right? We have a hard time very often believing that the chachamim, right, that the rabbis, who are those rabbis that are like making up all these halachot, you know? We have a very hard time understanding that they aren't just making stuff up, right? We have emunat chachamim, right? There's an idea that the chachamim are being guided also by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're being guided. These are huge talmidei chachamim. These are people who are learning Torah with kedusha, with tahara. They aren't just making things up. But even in those days, the people had a very difficult time believing in that, okay? And so, again, the Jews had a very intense light, and now it had become much weaker, and they literally felt like they were in darkness. So now enter Yavan, stage left, okay? Now this is where the Greeks are coming onto the scene with all of this background. Okay, so Revolba brings down in the Ali Shor, and this is brought down in many places. The second pasuk in Bereshit, it says, "V'haaretz haitah tohu v'avohu," right? The world was a confusion, The choshech al pnei tahom, right? And there was a darkness on me in the depths, okay? And so v'ruach elokim merachefet al pnei hamayim, right? There was a spirit of God hovering over the water. So the Medrash actually says that each one of these first four words represents one of the exiles. Okay, so tohu is Bavel, right? Babylonia. Vohu is Madai. And choshech is actually referring to Yavan, okay? And the last one is referring to Rome, okay? And so it's very, very interesting, okay? It talks about the Yavanim, that they brought darkness to our eyes. They tried to darken our eyes. It says that they wanted the Jews to write on the horn of an ox, right? That we have no chelek, we have no portion in the Torah of, in God, in the Elohim of Israel. Not in the Torah, but in the God of Israel. But it's very interesting if you think about it, right? If you're thinking about darkness, you don't necessarily think about Yavan, okay? Because Yavan, they were so enlightened, right? They had all this philosophy and art, right? We think of them as being so wise. And the truth is, a large part of the challenge of the galut, of this particular exile, was the fact that there was a certain similarity between us and the Yavanim, between us and the Greeks. We both had a very, very intense, you know, wisdom and philosophy. And so it happens to be that this specifically was what really made the Yavanim stew. They were really very frustrated by all of this, and it caused a lot of resistance on their part because they really couldn't tolerate a wisdom that they had no portion in. You know, they understood instinctively, intuitively, that whatever was going on with the Jews, it wasn't something that they could actually really relate to. You know, it was a godly wisdom, and the Jews were his chosen people, and that really bothered them. It wasn't just another branch of philosophy that they could learn, you know, and figure out. So it's important to understand actually what inherently is the difference between the wisdom of the Jews and the wisdom of the Greeks. So the wisdom of the Greeks really dealt with the world, which Rav Volba actually defines as matan hechrech. Okay, a matan is a gift, right? He gave us hechrech. Lehechriach means to force, right? It was something that was forced. As opposed to the Jews had the oral Torah, right? Our Torah was what we call Matan Chayrut, right? What is Chayrut, right? Freedom. So what does Hechrech mean? What does it mean that the Greeks very much connected only to this world of Hechrech? Meaning what? God created a natural world. There's a lot of rules and regulations to it, to the way the world runs. There's laws of nature that cannot be broken. I mean, God can break them, but we certainly can't break them. The sun rises, the sun sets, etc., etc. Even the way our bodies work, right? You can't change the circulatory system or the reproductive system. It doesn't work. Like, the way it is the way it is, and that's it. It cannot change. That was their philosophy. But this is not the case with Torah. And if you have the sources, I know you have the sources. It's source number 2. It looks like this. I know there's a few booklets in there, okay? Because I just want to show you inside, okay? Because this is something you probably, many of you have heard before. It says, V'haluchot ma'aseh Elokim hema, the luchot were the actions of God. V'hamichtav michtav Elokim, it was written by God. Hu charot al haluchot, it was engraved on the luchot. Al tikra charot ela cheirut, okay? We shouldn't read it as charot, but we should read it as cheirut. Right? The most free person is a person who's engaging in Torah. So only a person who's engaging in Torah is actually considered a free person. And so this is where the philosophy of the Jewish people and of the Greeks really kind of diverged. Okay? So as Jews, we very much believe that through the Torah we can achieve true freedom. We're not stuck in the confines of where we are and who we are, right? We very much believe that we have the ability to elevate ourselves, to break outside. You know, it says about Avraham Avinu, right? Vayetzei oto hachutza, right? God took him outside. And there are many ways of understanding that, including that Hashem took him out of his astrology, meaning we can break those barriers, right? We have the ability to rise above. We believe as Jews that the existence of something isn't just based on whether I can feel it and see it and touch it, or that it even makes sense, right? Because if that were the case, probably a lot of us would be doing something else right now, right? It's not always logical and it's not always tangible. And so this is very opposite to the Greek philosophy, because the Greeks very much
believe that humans were stuck, okay? Meaning the laws of nature are the way they are, and the laws of my nature are the way I am. Meaning I'm born an angry person, so I'm just gonna be angry, right? I can't necessarily break out of that. I'm bound by the laws of nature, and I'm bound by the laws of who I am, okay? And so we have to just realize that the perspective of Matan Hechrech, of this concept of being forced, that's an important foundation. Meaning Hashem created the world with 10 ma'amarot, with 10 utterances. There was a certain order and structure that was put into the world, and there was a reason for that. But that's not where it ends, and that's kind of where the Greeks ended. The Jews take it a step further, and we understand, yes, we need this boundaries, we need this structure, but we also have the ability to go beyond that, okay? And so, again, the Greeks got stuck on the outer layer, okay? But the Jews, with the Torah, were able to go into the depth, into the fruit, okay? Of the reality. And so again, the Greeks, what they were really trying to do was they were trying to reduce the Jews to a nation that was just stuck in an external relationship to this world and to themselves. They wanted to become the chosen nation. They were trying to edge us out. They wanted to take over that place. And they really tried darkening the Jewish people with these decrees that they you know, enforced against us to sever this relationship with that Or Eloki, because it's that Or Eloki that really brings meaning and depth to the words of the Torah. And the Greeks knew that they had no access to this, and it really, really bothered them very much, okay? And the truth is, you know, we know a lot that there's Greek philosophy. They really tried, in a very superficial way, they tried to connect to panimiot, to internality. But it doesn't work, because you can't connect to internality, to panimiot, in a superficial way. And so it just left them being very, very frustrated. Okay, and so, you know, what's interesting is that really what the Greeks did was that they redefined freedom, which is really a definition that we have to this day, you know, amongst many people in the world. If you ask someone what it means to be free, what do they say? Do what you want, right? So that was the way that the Greeks defined freedom. How did the Jews define freedom? That's not how we define freedom. We define freedom as I have the ability to control myself. I have the ability to control my desires. I'm not just a slave to whatever comes my way, to whatever whim comes my way. Again, it's a very, very different concept, okay? And what we have to realize is that the galut, the exile of Yavam, was very subtle, believe it or not. I know there were decrees, but they weren't trying to destroy the Jewish people, right? In the other exiles, they were trying to kill us. They weren't trying to kill us in this exile. They were trying to darken us. They were trying to sever our relationship with the internality of God, right? Of being God's people. That's much more, it's a spiritual exile more than it was a physical exile. And that's much more subtle. And to a large degree, the Yevanim were actually very successful, right? A lot of Jews assimilated, right? And we see again, to this day, we're still suffering from these ideas. So the fact that in those days that there was, you know, the miracles that happened that allowed us to overcome the Greeks, we can really appreciate now how amazing and tremendous that was. It was really the victory of pnimiut, of internality, over chitzoniut, right, of our externality. It was the victory of the wisdom of Torah over the wisdom of the Greeks. And this is very much reflected in the mitzvah of candlelighting. So if you want to look at the sheets on just source number 3, again, this is from a Sefer Oscha Vakesh, based on Rav Kluger's teachings. So Neirot HaChanukah Shedolkim Midei Shana Bevatei Am Yisrael, right? These candles of Hanukkah that we light in all the homes of the Jewish people, Misaprim Al Ha'or HaEloki. They really tell a story of this godly light. Shesharetet HaGalut HaArucha VaHashucha. It survived all these years of this long, long, dark galut. VaAdayin Dolek V'Neshamot Am Yisrael, right? It's still lit in our neshamot. Vehu af holech umidgale likrat chait haYeshua, and it's still going, and Bezrat Hashem, it's going to greet the ultimate redemption, Bezrat Hashem. Haneirot halalu kodeshim, right? These neirot are very holy. Ish koch beuriyatam laorer et or nishmatenu. Just by looking at these lights of Chanukah, we can arouse this godly light within us. When we look at these candles and we experience this inner relationship that we have with God, here amongst all the difficulties of this world, it should inspire us to give praise and gratitude and thank you to Hashem al hanisim v'haniflaot Hashem osei manu bizman hazeh, for all the miracles that He does for us in these days as well. שהוא נוצא לנו בתוך עומק הסתר הגלות, לדעת ולהכיר את אורו הרבה מעבר לדרגה שלנו. He really gives us access to this light way above what we really deserve, okay? And way more than we actually think that we can actually access it. So just to end, because it's very beautiful, and it's something we can think about when we're lighting our own candles, אילו פינו מלא שירה קיים, if our mouths were filled with song like the ocean, אין אנחנו מספיקים להודות לך. להודות על מתנה נפלאה זו. We can never have enough words to thank God for this tremendous gift. הגדולה מכל המתנות, greater than all other gifts, הקשר הגלוי עם ריבונו של עולם. It is this revealed relationship that we have with God. It's a tremendous gift. נבקש גם מהבורא יתברך מול נרות החנוכה. So ladies, we should ask God, when we're lighting our own Shabbos Chanukah candles, excuse me, שאורו ימשיך להתפשט לכל אחינו בני ישראל, that this light should actually spread out to all of our brothers and sisters amongst the Jewish people, עד שיציף את העולם כולו, until it really overflows into the whole world, ונזכה לגאולה שלמה, ומעל הארץ דעת השם. So we ultimately have the final geula, and the whole world is filled with the knowledge of God. Okay, so that's what the Chanukah candles represents, and hopefully when we're lighting them, we can have this thought process. Okay, so this is why Rav Volba actually says that the main avodah, right, the main work of Chanukah is what we'd call avodah shebalev, because it wasn't as much of a physical victory as it was a spiritual victory. And so the avodah of Chanukah is really in our hearts. And this means praising and thanking, like we said, halel, hoda'ah, trying to be the best that we can be, and not fearing anybody, because we know that ultimately Hashem has our backs, right? And Hashem is carrying us, and he's holding us with both of his hands. Okay, so now with that background, we can better understand the decrees that were made and also the miracles that happened. Okay, so I want to show you, if you look back on the page, because this source kept coming up over and over and over again, so it's always good to see it inside. This is from the Bach on the tour of Shulchan Aruch, or Chaim. So he says, first he talks about Purim, which I'm not going to talk about, and how they tried to destroy our bodies, and so that's why we celebrate Purim with very physical things like eating and drinking, etc. But B'Chanukah, I think I bracketed it off for you, B'Chanukah Iker HaGzeira Haita Al Shehit Rashlu Ba'avoda. Why did the decrees come on the Jewish people, he says? Because they were Him Hitrashlu Alavoda, they were negligent, right, in their service. Va'al kein haita ha'gzeira levatel mehem ha'avoda. That's why the decrees came in order to nullify their avoda.
Could you tell us what number you're on?
Number 4, sorry. Kidatani Bebraisa, Shekazar Levatel Hatamid, Va'od Amarlo Mitzvah Achat Ish Biyadan Imatem Mevatlinotan Miadam Kvar Heim Avudin. Ve'ezaze Hadlakat HaMenorah. So it's a difference of opinion whether they nullified their. They told them that they couldn't bring the korban tamid anymore, right? They used to bring a korban every single day, or they couldn't light the menorah anymore. Either way, they nullified the Jews, aside from Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh and Bris, which we all know about, but also in the Beit HaMikdash itself, there were also decrees, okay? And he's telling us that the reason that this came was because they were very negligent in their avodah. And so Rav Volba teaches us from this idea that we have to realize that the decrees that our enemies make are not arbitrary. They're usually midah keneged midah, as we say. They're measure for measure. Decrees of hester, where God is hiding himself, are a result of spiritual lacks that exist in the generation. And so by doing tshuva and by actively working to correct the wrongs, so hopefully the decrees will be overturned, as we saw on Purim, right? Even though this came first. Okay, we suffered from negligence in our avoda. And so the decree specifically targeted the avoda, okay? Not being allowed to bring the korban tamid, not being allowed to light the menorah. And Rav Friedlander in the Siftei Chaim explains that the negligence in general, generally results from me putting my ego and my convenience, you know, above everything else. And I'm sure we can all relate. It's hard to keep up momentum in mitzvot that we do every day. How many of us are like, yay, I get to daven shacharis again today. Wow, I'm so excited, right? Maybe you do. Good. Okay. If you do get to daven every day, or whatever mitzvot that we do, we make brachot, we bench, whatever it is, the mitzvot that we do every day, we just, you know, it's hard to keep up that enthusiasm and that excitement. It's like a normal human reality, okay? But, and so they became negligent in these things. I don't know how it manifested exactly, but the Bach is telling us that's what was going on. And so the Greeks understood what we also need to understand. If something is something that we have to do every day, that means it's really important, right? And so the Greeks were like, if this is so important, I don't want them doing this anymore, okay? And so that's why they specifically targeted at that. And so the tshuva for this is, for this hitrashlut, for this negligence, is what we would call mesirut nefesh, okay? Which is one of those Hebrew terms that's kind of hard to really explain and put into words, giving over my soul. And there's different ways of understanding it. It happens to be that the way that the Siftei Chaim explains it is that it's putting aside my comfort and my convenience for spiritual values, okay? My nefesh comes first, not my body, right? That's what mesirut nefesh means. So once the Kohanim, the Chashmonaim, right? Once they were moser nefesh for the Avodah, so they merited miracles, both military miracles and miracles in terms of their Avodah, right? They were able to find that pach shemen, that little, you know, jar of oil. And this was a miracle, actually, with a very unique purpose, because the other nisim, the other miracles that happened to the Jews was so that they could win, right? So that they would be victorious over the Greeks. But this was not. This was a different type of miracle. This was a miracle that just allowed them to be able to keep the avoda, to keep the avoda in the Beit HaMikdash to its maximum. And, you know, again, this wasn't an integral part of us being victorious over the Greeks, but it was what I would call icing on the cake, right? Matityahu and his sons sacrificed their lives for Hashem's will and for the Avoda in the Beit HaMikdash. And so again, we can learn from this. It's important to take practical lessons from things that happen. The practical lesson that we can learn from this is the importance of our diligence and consistency in our Avodat Hashem. Showing up every day, right, for serving God with a big smile and a bit of excitement. So if you want to just quickly look at source number 7. Okay, so this is from the Siftei Chaim. So he says, Hanagat Hashem zu shel tzirat gedarei hateva, va'avor mi shemoser et nafsho umuvater al utzonotav hativiim l'man Hashem yitbarach b'torato. So the way that God interfaces with the Jewish people is that he is willing to break the law, the boundaries of nature for somebody who is breaking their own nature, right? For somebody who is sacrificing or giving their own soul, giving up on their own desires, on their own natural desires, in order to serve Hashem and to keep his Torah. Asher ba'al yidei bitui b'neis Shem and b'chanukah. This came to its full expression through the neis of finding the Shemen on Chanukah. We have to realize this isn't just something that happened once, you know, many, many thousands of years ago. But this teaches, excuse me, every single one of us a practical halacha. To the degree that a person gives up, right, on their convenience, umidgaber al tivo, and, you know, overcomes his nature, b'shvil avodat Hashem, for Torah, for tefillah, for kima mitzvot, for tikkun amidot, for all of these things. Okay, fixing ourselves, all of the, you know, davening, learning, etc. Kach zocha shekadosh baruch hu mesayei lo umoramei oto me'al yicholet hativit harigila shelo. So God will meet us halfway, right? He'll reward us in kind. Okay, by helping us be able to elevate ourselves way more than we ever could have thought possible. Ra'inu, you know, and he brings here, you know, Ra'inu Talmid Chacham, or Talmidei Chachamim, Shelo Hayu Kol Kach Kishroniyim B'Tzivam, V'Zachu Liyot Gedolei Yisrael, She'et Toratam Anu Lomdim, right? There are Talmidei Chachamim that we all know and we don't realize. They weren't so great when they were young. They didn't do so well in yeshiva when they were young. They didn't have such great skills or whatever. But they wanted it so badly, and they learned, and they put so much effort into it that Hashem rewarded them, okay, with an extra amount of siyat dishmaya. L'chein patach l'makadosh baruch hu et shayat Torah. God opened up the gates of Torah for them. Behekef uba'omek harbe me'al ha'yicholet hativit ha'rigila shel kishonotam. Well beyond their natural abilities. Tofa'azu yachol kol echad v'chad l'ra'ot v'lechech bo atzmo midei yom biyomo. We can all attest probably to this phenomenon if you really stop and think about it. Av shevada yish baza madrigot rabot. Obviously, there's many levels here. Shekafi shebevater umevatel et yitzonotav umishtadel yitchazek l'man Hashem yitzbarach. The more a person is willing to give up, right, and not give in to his desires, and tries to strengthen himself for God, but otamida zocha l'siyat dishmaya. So such a person is going to merit a lot of help from God. Okay, so Rav Friedlander explains that a nes
as we understand, he goes on to explain that Anais is breaking the laws of nature, right? The laws of nature are broken when you see a miracle. And he says, generally, the nature of man is, as we're saying, to do what I want, right? I have an agenda. I want to fulfill my desires. But if he raises himself above his Anochi, right, and he breaks out of his desires, Hashem is going to break and nullify the laws of nature for him, okay? And that's something that we have to really understand, okay? Rav Volba also stresses that it's the Mesirut Nefesh that really brings the Nisim. That's what really brought the Nisim for the Jewish people, okay? It was the Mesirut Nefesh that they displayed. And really, all mitzvot require some level of Mesirut Nefesh, and we know there are mitzvot that require more, like Yehareg Va'al Yavo, right? There are certain mitzvot that a person has to actually be willing to give his life for. Okay, that's like to the extreme. But really, I think we can all appreciate to keep Torah and mitzvot, it takes self-sacrifice. It's not always so easy. Okay, so again, if you want to look inside for a sec, I want to show you the Ali Shor, source number 5. Geder Zesha Mesirut Nefesh Hu. How does he explain what Mesirut Nefesh is, right? So there's different definitions. We said one definition of Mesirut Nefesh is not giving into my conveniences and my desires, okay, in order to serve Hashem. Here he says, Geder Zeshel Mesiris Nevesh Hu Lelechet Ba'avodat Hashem Ad Kitzei Gevul Kochot HaNevesh Ba'Adam. I have to push myself to the maximum. She Yehiyu Kochot HaAdam Ba'avodat Ba'Po'al HaGemor. You know, I think about, you know, somebody who's an Olympic athlete, right? They're pushing their bodies to the absolute max, right? You look at these people, that's not what the normative person can do, right? But they really want this and they really push themselves. That's what's being expected of us. That's what Mesirut Nefesh is. I'm pushing myself beyond all, you know, rational limits of what I actually think that I can do. But Kan Husod HaNisim, he said, this is the mystery, this is the secret of miracles. Kasher HaAdam Inatzel Kol HaKochot When a person harnesses all of the kochot, the strengths that they have naturally, ad hakatze, to the extreme, that's when a person can reach the level of above nature. And that's Chanukah, by the way. Chanukah is the number 8, which is above nature. So that's why is this? Because l'mal min ha-teva really represents godliness. It's not just what goes on in this world, right? That's 6 is teva, 7 is a mixture of teva and lamala min teva, but 8 is pure lamala min teva. Umisha menatzel kol ma shenitan lo b'teva, anyone who's able to harness that which is naturally given to him, zochel lamala min teva dahinu neis. They are going to merit God taking them over the finish line, right? And really being able to accomplish much more than they ever thought that they would be able to do. Rav Dessler Michzav Eliyahu actually focuses on another aspect of Mesirut Nefesh, okay? He says that it's an active, you know, we're constantly in an active struggle with the Yetzer Hara. I don't know, at least I am. I don't know about all of you, okay? But I think we can all appreciate that, you know, we're constantly faced with danger all around us. And a person has to get to a point where they're just like, ein brera, right, as we say. There's no choice. I don't have a choice. I have to harness all my strength, right? I have to do the best that I can and be careful as possible because that's the only way that I can actually be successful. I actually just want to share with you, I didn't put this in your in the booklet, but I'm reading this book, which I highly recommend, called Mindfulness by Dr. Feiner. It's called Mindfulness, A Jewish Approach by Dr. Jonathan Feiner. Anyway, He quotes here from Rav Lichtenstein, actually, which I think is just a beautiful quote, so I wanted to share it with you. He says, Yichud Hashem means simply that religion alone has absolute and comprehensive value. Everything else, no matter how socially or intellectually desirable, has only relative and secondary importance. Its worth is derived solely from the extent to which it contributes, however remotely, to the fulfillment of the divine will. On this point, there can be no compromise and should be no misunderstanding. And this is the line, a man's religion means everything or it means nothing. Okay, that doesn't mean Judaism is all or nothing, but it means that it means everything to you or it doesn't mean anything to you. Okay, because that's going to manifest itself in how much, again, as we're saying, how much am I willing to push myself, you know, outside of my comfort zone. So this mindset, by the way, of Ein Breira, there's no choice. This is actually what allowed Avraham Avinu to walk out of the furnace, of the Kivshan HaEsh. You know, Nimrod threw him in there and he went in happily because he said, if I can't live life with God, then there is no life. I'd rather die. There's nothing to live for. Haran, on the other hand, right, his brother wasn't so lucky. He didn't come out alive. Why didn't he come out alive? Because he was willing to entertain the possibility that there is no God, right? He said, if Avram comes out, I'm with him. If he doesn't come out, I'm with Nimrod. So to him, he wasn't quite sure. He was able to see life without God, so he didn't make it out of the Kivshan Ha'esh. But Avram Avinu, what allowed him to walk out was this feeling of Ein Breira, okay? And it's this idea of Ein Breira that the Chashmonaim went into battle with. They were like, I don't want to live in empty Judaism. I don't want to live a life of Torah without God. If I can't live life, a life of God with Torah, then there's no life. And they would rather die, okay? And so they were willing to sacrifice themselves in order to be able to accomplish that. So there's a couple of, quickly, if you look at source number 6, just to share with you a couple of things. I'm not going to read the whole thing. This is from Michtam Meliyahu, from Rav Dessler. So he starts the second line. So somebody who is able to overcome their cheshbonot, right? We all have cheshbonot, we all know what that means, right? All of the rationalizations, justifications, but I don't understand, and why would God do this to me? All the cheshbonot that a person can have. Okay, somebody who's able to overcome that, all the logical cheshbonot, which is, by the way, the only way Avraham Avinu was able to withstand all of his tests, right? Especially the last one of the Akedat Yitzchak. So he's going to merit to have a nace from, you know, that's outside of nature, okay? I'm going to skip down a little bit just because we don't have a lot of time. We're on source number 6, okay? We're in the second paragraph, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines up, okay? Kimisha Adam Eno Chafetz, Kimasha Adam Eno Chafetz, Eno Efshari Bishvilo. We have to understand, something that a person doesn't want is not possible for him. But something that your heart really wants, it becomes very possible for you. So what kind of love does God want from us? He wants a love that defies logic, right? You know, you can have a child whose parent is a complete mess, right? But somehow the child still rationalizes, you know, the parents' behavior. They love them so much that they try to be done with kasulut, right? They try to find some merit in what they've done because they have a very strong love, and love defies logic. I think we all can understand that. We need to have love that defies logic when it comes to our relationship with Hashem. It has to, you know, again, be stronger than any boundaries. Dafka zohi nekret amidat b'nisayon, by the way. This is what he calls withstanding a test. Withstanding a test means lo dai la'asot ma shebekocheinu. It's not enough to do what's in my power. Ela tovim imenu gam ma shenirat kilamala mikocheinu. But God asks from us to go outside of our strength. And we see all the time, I mean, lo aleinu, all these terrible tragedies, and you hear the parents, you know, talking so often with such emunah, right, about what happened. And that's not normal, right? That's not logical. It makes no sense, right? And these people are tapping into this reality, right? Of I'm pushing myself beyond any strength, you know, sense of logic at all. Okay, so a couple of lines down. We're talking about the Chashmonaim. And so therefore, they merited a tremendous amount of godly intervention. Nes Chanukah moreh lano. The miracles of Hanukkah teach us she'en makom le'yeush v'makom she'ner'im hadrachim chasumim u'mugbalim b'derech hateva. Ladies, there's no possibility, there's no room for despair. Okay, even when things seem like there's no way out. I always think about the Jews by the Yam Suf, right? They literally had no way out, but somehow God managed to find a way out for them. Okay, so a person should never ever feel like there's no way out and I'm just stuck. Okay? Because we don't live with derech hateva. As Jews, we defy teva. Yitameitz biyoter kevan she'in beira. You strengthen yourself. Why? Because there's no choice. Va'az yiftechu lo sha'rei siyat dishmaya chadashim. And then God will open up many new gates of siyat dishmaya. Okay, I just feel mixed. We don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to put that aside. I do recommend reading this through if you can on your own time. This is Rav Dessler. The Michtam Meliyahu.
No, the miracle. The mindfulness.
Oh, Dr. Jonathan Feiner. Okay, so Rav Kluger in Oschava case stresses that when Jews get attacked by an enemy, it's an enemy that embodies the deficiency of what the Jews need to fix, okay? And you can contemplate that on your own time, right? And certainly you can think about that nowadays. What is the deficiency that we have that we're being so much bombarded and attacked by Yishmael? I don't have an answer for you, but generally, this is an idea that we have to kind of ruminate in, okay? The Greeks, again, were very much fighting against the light and internality of God, our godly connection that the Jews have with Hashem. And so they really wanted to do the best that they could to show that there's no godliness hidden in the Torah at all. Okay? It's a body without a soul. It's just physical words with no meaning. That's what we were fighting against. And the decrees targeted Shabbos. They targeted Brit, right? What was a Brit Milah? A Brit Milah was that sign which distinguished a child as different than the rest of the nations of the world. The Greeks could not handle that. What do you mean? There's no difference. There's no inherent difference whatsoever. The Chot Rosh Chodesh, the Chachamim had the ability to take time and, you know, and be Makadesh, to make it holy, right? To draw down energy of the month, right? Of the holidays, by being Makadesh, by sanctifying time. These were all things that they couldn't relate to, and they desperately were trying to separate the godliness out of the Jewish people. And the Greeks, as I said before, they didn't try to destroy the Jewish people. They wanted to breach the Jews, okay? And what did they do in the Beit HaMikdash? They breached the wall, the chel. There was a certain wall up that was like the borderline. That was up to where a non-Jew could go. That's what they breached. Because what were they trying to show? We're the same. We're no different. There's no difference between us, okay? Jews and non-Jews are all equal. Timu kol hashmanim, they made all of the shemen tame. Why did they do that? Again, what is tuma and tahara, right? If you think about a chok, right, you think about a law that has no actual logical meaning, tuma and tahara is like the epitome of that. This was so antithetical to their reality, okay? So they were just like, what are you talking about? There's no such thing as tuma and tahara, right? We could touch this. It's not. It doesn't do anything, right? There's no such thing. Again, they couldn't understand things that were above logic. It didn't make sense to them, and therefore they had no relationship with it. And so the Chashmanim fought a very holy war to return the light of Torah to Am Yisrael. This is what they were trying to do. Even though we no longer have Nevuah, we still have access to godliness, okay? And the revealed miracles that happened on Hanukkah were to show the world that the Jews still have this God energy, okay? So I have like three more minutes. So I have to decide what I want to share with you. First of all, Rav Friedlander says in the Sifti Chaim that the Ikar Nes, right, the most essential Nes for which we celebrate Hanukkah is the Nes of the Pach Shemen, which is interesting because, again, the military victory was quite an event. But he said we cannot decree Hallel, Hodah, like a holiday on a miracle that's not revealed. And believe it or not, the military victory was not revealed. Why? Because you can say naturally that they'd won, right? You can attribute it to some kind of natural. Think about 1967. Yeah, we all realize what a miracle it was, but there were plenty of people who are just like, yeah, okay, the Jews, I don't know, they were shy, who knows, right? You can somehow attribute everything to nature. You could not attribute a pach of shemen lasting for 8 days to anything natural. So that was much more of the revealed nes, and that's why Hanukkah was really centered very much around that particular miracle. And that was there to teach us that all miracles that happened to us, all the victories, everything else that happened was all as a result of God. Okay? It was God being with us. Okay? So let me just give you a few ideas to walk away with very practically. As Zmira also was saying, Hanukkah is a time to focus on the fact, is to focus on the hands of God in our lives, big and small. We want to recognize it, and we want to thank him for it on a daily basis. On Hanukkah, we celebrate the Geula. And Rav Friedlander actually defines Geula, right, redemption, as Hashra'at HaShchina, right, where the Shechina is going to come back in all of its glory. And this represents that very tight relationship that we have with Hashem, our ability to read between the lines in Torah, right, and to infuse our Avodat Hashem with Neshama. And that's what we're trying to do, ladies. We're trying to live a deep, meaningful Judaism with godliness in it. I know it sounds crazy, but there are people who can do mitzvot and learn Torah, and it's devoid of God, right? And we don't want that, okay? We're looking not to just have a Yiddishkeit where we get to check off boxes, right? We're not just checking off boxes. Again, remember the marriage, okay? And hopefully the things that we do in our marriage represent something much deeper. So it should be that way in our marriage, in our marriage, so to speak, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. Definitely, we don't want to ever put limits on what we can accomplish. Don't ever sell yourself short. You want to push yourself to your limits. Don't allow the day-to-day mitzvot to get swallowed up by habit and boredom. You know, just like we try to think of ways to spice up our marriages, right? We read all kinds of books and articles about that. So we need to think of ways to spice up our marriage with God, right? We have to think about ways to, you know, enliven our avodat Hashem. So it shouldn't just be something that we do because we've been doing it since we were young. And finally, as Ovdei Hashem, our attitude should always be in Breira. There's no life without this, okay? I want to put my best foot forward to try to live a deep Judaism. Otherwise, I'm really going to have no success. And it just made me think about, you know, if God forbid a person has a heart attack, right? And they go to the doctor, and the doctor's going to give them a whole list of things that they can't eat and things that they have to do, exercising. And, you know, the first reaction is like, oh, I don't want to have to do this, right? It's really like cramping my style. You know, it's not enjoyable. It's not comfortable. But you would hope that over time, this person's going to feel better, right? And they're going to realize that this is going to give them the best success in terms of being able to have a happy and healthy life. And so, for us as Jews as well, yeah, sometimes it can seem very like suffocating and over. We have so many things that we have to do, but hopefully sooner than later, right, we really understand that this is really the prescription for us to have the best and happiest and healthiest lives as Jews, as Ovdei Hashem. And I wish you all a happy Hanukkah.